Hello, everybody. I realize that I've been a little bit missing in action here. Conference is coming up, and this is the year 2020. We're all supposed to see a little bit better than presently we do see. I thought I have in mind to comment on a number of the Tibetan books, as I have been doing. But there is this excellent compilation by Zachary Rymill. He's an excellent has been an excellent compilationist. And I would like to deal with the fourth initiation. Now, obviously, this is beyond us. And even when you look at the Tibetans group of students, even the third degree was beyond them, by and large. He was training mostly people for the first and second initiation. Later, he did mention that the possibility of the fourth initiation, or rather third, was there as well. That was not an immediate goal. But for some, like Alice Bailey, we have to assume she was a third degree initiate, given all she had done, a real world disciple. And Roberto Saggioli, we have to assume that he was an initiate disciple of the third degree, at least eventually, and being trained for the fourth, as Alice Bailey was as well. And even though Foster Bailey would be occupying the same secretarial position in a way within Master M's ashram, as Alice Bailey was doing in Master KH's ashram, we cannot assume that he was necessarily a third degree initiate, although things could point in that direction. What I like about Zach's compilations is his underlining and enlarging of relevant points. And what I have prepared for you so far, some time ago, was some papers, some commentary on the first, second, and third degree. They're by no means complete. This looks like it will be a fairly complete presentation with 290 hits from Alice Bailey's books. And I'd just like to see, going into this in this manner. Just like to see how many hits there really are. Maybe Zach took them all into consideration. Well, it says about 180. And so obviously he had some other means of drawing them in and finding what was relevant. So I think the only thing to do is simply to begin. Now, you know, this is an unusual year because of the coronavirus. And for the first time in 34 years, we will not be having an in-person conference. Not exactly. Instead, we will be having a streamed conference. Now, maybe if you ever get to listen to this, this will be all history. And we don't know where it's going except a great house cleaning under the direction of Sanat Kumara is underway. I think what has been called a universal epidemic is underway. It will cause tremendous suffering, but maybe a bringing together of humanity under the Buddhic imagery. You know, we do have, let's see if I can find this. It's always the thing, you know, to try to find the to try to find these reference charts. And Tuya has here, of course, some important charts that she has colored in the right direction. Basically, we're looking at the way of connecting the Buddhic plane, which is in the cosmic ethers, the fourth plane or the intuitive plane or plane of pure reason, first real plane of truth. We're looking at connecting that with the mental plane. So finally, we have Buddhimanas. Finally. If you hear some strange sounds like bells, just ignore them. They're going off in my head. So our connection here is with the Buddhic and monastic planes. If we were dealing more specifically with the atmic plane, we would be dealing with the fifth initiation and some little bit of that influence can percolate down into our consciousness, our normal consciousness, once we have advanced a little and tried to develop the Antikarana. So my method, as usual, will simply be to read what the Tibetan has said. And if some thought comes to me, which I think will be of value to you, then I'll mention it. There's no perfection in this, you know. No perfection. Here we have more or less the time when I started to do this. And hopefully it's a somewhat creative effort. The third wing on the left side of the butterfly will involve some intuition and some digging into the past. It will involve some meticulousness with the moon in Virgo. It will involves some Antikorana building with the Venus as the ruler in Gemini, as the ruler of the ascendant. So, and I'm not sure exactly how long these will last. Some last a short time, and others tend to go on. I think the two prim spinsters sitting together in silence may have something to do with the two planes which have to face each other, and their union does come in the silence. Hopefully there will not be a misleading statements. I try my best. And here is an esoteric ruler of the ascendant, which is Uranus, and a bridge is built across a gorge. And we can understand the danger of doing such a thing, but also at the same time, we understand the symbol for the Antikorana, so that the gap that currently exists between our normal world of consciousness and the higher world will be bridged. And a little more. And here's the moon in Virgo. A powerful statesman wins to his cause an hysterical mob. Maybe we esotericists are that hysterical mob. And the Tibetan certainly is the powerful statesman. We're beginning this in a way also when the Jupiter-Pluto conjunction is very much in effect, as you see down here. So, you know, an expansion of the mind, a healing of the mind, all in the third house. And, you know how Pluto is, it tends to dig into things. There's a lot of mental plane rulers that are here. Mars, actually, concrete mind, Saturn, concrete mind and atomic mind. And also, Mars is very active on the physical plane. And Jupiter is Buddhic. And Pluto is intensely mental from one perspective. That will all be blended in with a conjunction of Mercury and Neptune. And it's hard to get two planets which are more Buddhic than those two together. And the wisdom of the stored in the egoic lotus, I think, will be made available, as well as the higher wisdom of pure reasoning. Elsewhere, we're told that Neptune is the god of reasoning, god of reason. And Mercury, certainly in its higher function, is that. And we'll be, you know, digging into some very deep matters. Like I say, I don't think I'll necessarily be able to finish this before the conference. But at least there's a start. So I guess we can consider either 23 rising for the creativity of it, or we can consider 22 rising. Chanticleer salutes the rising sun with exuberant tones. I think sometimes when you get into Master DK, there is the sense of exuberance. Yes, the sense of exuberance because of the amazing information that he attends to give. And I hope you'll be hearing me adequately. Sometimes I don't know with these microphones. My cat ate the wire on the last quite good microphone, rendering it completely useless. So I've got something else on at the moment. And hopefully it will be somewhat of value. So let's go. And I'll be trusting on my colleagues to maybe make a little notation, a little list of the kinds of things that are being covered here. It's kind of interesting, you know, when I look at it, Venus and Saturn, which are two rulers of Libra, they are in quite a close trine. And Venus is in that quite mental sign Gemini, which is so good at magnetizing and drawing together the pairs of opposites. Okay. Now, compilation on the fourth initiation. And I guess looks like Zach put that in. Starting Thursday, the 16th of April. Well, we're in Aries now, and 2009, 11 years ago. And it looks like we start with the order, natural order of the books, where such references are offered. A Destiny of the Nations, page 129. It will be apparent, therefore, that having established the two points of energy, mental and physical, the next task of the worker in magic will be to produce a synthesis upon the physical plane of the available energies. This is the magical process, of course. To concretize them, because we try to bring the testimony of the higher worlds into useful expression upon the physical plane, and to invest that which has been constructed with the potency of activity and persistence. We need strong forms. We need them to continue. We don't need, as so many of us do produce from time to time, half-baked ideas that have no chance of really enduring, and enduring usefully. The energy thus employed will, in the majority of cases, be of three kinds. Okay. One, the energy of the mind. This will be the dominant controlling energy used during the period of accepted discipleship. And until the second initiation, you know, at the second degree, spiritual intelligence and the illumined mind, and a special throat center stimulation, And the kind of discipleship we are oftentimes talking about for the accepted disciple has Mercury and Saturn, two very mental planets, both of them having application to the concrete mind, even though they can be applied to higher areas, logoic, atmic. For Saturn and for Mercury, Buddhic. And, found within the soul itself as the sun of mind. Basically, what we have to do is learn to pull together many references under the impulse of pure reason, which is real and which is not just imagined or supposed, but is what the intuition reveals. Now, of course, the whole fourth plane is in a way called the plane of intuition, but it's not until you reach the fourth level of the fourth plane that the real intuition kicks in. Over here, Keith Bailey, a very profound student of the work. He made a compendium, and which shows that on the Buddhic plane, intuition is the four of four. The various powers or siddhis are listed in relation to the plane in which they serve. And of course, there are even sub-planes. Well, we don't want to get too minute and miss the main point. But as you see, intuition at the four of four. The whole idea of number four is very intuitive. And we're heading into a period when the fourth ray types from their monadic aspect will be strengthened and becoming into incarnation. That ray comes into incarnation from its monadic expression. And there are fourth ray monads, All seven types are found on the monadic level, even on the very highest level, which is logoic. Only three types are found. And I think I can show you that. Three types on the logoid level and basically seven types on the monadic level. That is a strange arrangement, but always when there is a seven, look for three above it. It's the Kabbalistic method of apportioning the powers. Seven Sephiroth surmounted by the three, which are still greater, Kether, Chochmah, and Bina. Okay, now going on. Those are the energy of the mind. And as I said, we have to have that energy really to take the second initiation. And although the heart is always being stimulated, there's a special stimulation of the throat center at that second initiation. Well, it's a little bit difficult to sustain an exact accounting of how long this is taking. My chronometer keeps on shutting off at strange moments, so you may have to do with some odd times. Then there's the energy of the soul. This will be wielded, used, and creatively employed from the second until the third initiation. That's a very interesting comment. At first, on the way up to the second initiation, it's mind without much soul influence. But here, from the second to the third, where quite a few of the advanced students find themselves, let's call it the advanced disciple, the soul enters. And how do we tell it's the soul? Well, there really is a difference in perspective. There is a sense of unity in that which is perceived. It's hard to talk about that. I guess it has to be experienced by us, that sense of unity. Very subtle. And then, see, the mind divides things, splits things, looks at their relationships as one thing is related to another, but somehow the soul sees a kind of wholeness. And we do have to practice that perception of wholeness. And then number three, the energy of soul and mind blended and synthesized, higher mind and lower mind, I suppose. This combination is of tremendous potency. Mind and soul, the illumined mind and the unity of mind. Sometimes you look to see what soul mind can be called. And son of mind, unity of mind, these are good ways of understanding it. One has to be very still and allow that kind of perception to begin to dawn. And after the fourth initiation, this will be augmented. See, we're always adding additional energies in the constitution of man. This will be augmented by energy coming from the monad. Now, there is some kind of monadic impression which is engaged at the third degree, but the freedom or the powerful expression of the monad, unblocked by all kinds of even high thought forms, is coming in at the fourth degree. So think about that. And I guess what that means is that the monadic expression is even stronger on the Buddhic plane than it is on the mental plane. If you look at it, it's a very much of a 2-4-6 combination. This is the monadic plane, and the cosmic astral is in alignment with it, and the buddhic and the astral. This doesn't mean that the monad is not impactful on other planes. It is. But notice that the monadic plane is a plane number two. And so in a strange sort of way, it may be the center of will. But it involves the 2, 4, 6, and even, in a way, the cosmic astral plane, which is the 6. And it's on the 6th plane, counting from below, when we deal with the cosmic physical plane. So this idea of the monad being related to idealism, very high idealism of the 6th ray, is strong. And when you think about the rulers of the 2nd plane, or 6th, well, there's much Jupiter, much Neptune, and they are related both to Pisces and Virgo. And we do know that Pisces and Virgo, particularly at this time, bring in the second and sixth rays. Both of them do. So, these are three energies, and they are additive. The mind, the soul-infused mind, and the monad. Now, meanwhile, very much we might say that the spiritual triad is an extension of the monad, and so obviously those parts of the triad are being added as we ascend. The important thing is that we get an idea or an experience, let's call it an experience, of what some of these higher states really are. We can talk about them. We can find intelligent ways to discuss. But we have to find something else as well, which is very subtle. I was just thinking, you know, I'm looking at my background. I keep switching around from the temple to other rooms, to other rooms. Now I'm at the dining room table. And before me, so many Easter flowers. Easter, the flowering of the true individual in a state of resurrection. And that flowering, you know, kind of ruled by the 2nd ray as the 7th initiation, which is the resurrection, is ruled. Mostly the, not the stem, not the color, but the fragrance. That is what we experience. A time of great joy and exaltation. Okay. So that was discipleship in the New Age. Now here, here's a little bit about the 4th initiation coming from Dina 1, page 312. And if I was to look at this, we can see what disciple we are dealing with. Could be it's an advanced disciple, no question. and Brother of Ancient Days. All of these things will be made clear. Yeah. DLR. I guess this was a disciple who was taking the second initiation. And let's just see if I can locate this. And this has been published, you know, so, and compliments to also John Cobb and Keith Bailey of AUM. And let's see if I can DLR. DLR. Somewhere here it has to be. I'm not sure exactly. Oh, here it is. Yeah. A certain Charles Hill. Love, detachment, love to all beings and radiation. Had interesting rays, you know. 15567. But it becomes obvious that even though he's so fifth ray, for whatever purpose that was given, that his monadic ray must be the second, even though he was in the glamour group, and the only soft line ray was the sixth. He helped to stabilize the group. So let's see what's said. From page 312. It's possible to learn so much, you know, on these, as we look at the immediate and the personal, and as we look at the planetary, solar, systemic, and cosmic, we can bring these all together. You are learning the lesson of detachment. That's the D part, right? With rapidity. And you are gradually standing free from the clinging hands of others. I guess every disciple has to go through that. There will always be a time when the people who have not yet learned to rely upon themselves are wanting a little piece of you. We'll add that all up and it ends up to being a pretty big piece. But it's natural. It's understood. A teacher has a difficult task being present and yet not so close that there is a problem with creating dependency, or, as Master Moria has said, creating weaklings if you give too much. And probably all of us will experience or have experienced what it's like to want to give so much, but the effect is not what we hoped it would be. The effect is to create dependency. And we learn from Master DK that a master becomes a master by mastering. So obviously no one's going to do it for us. You have learned to stand free gradually from the clinging hands of others, just as the great renunciation of the fourth initiation, that of course is the maybe the more esoteric way of describing it, rather than in the kind of gory description that we call the crucifixion, although there is plenty of occultism in that as well. Just as the great initiation of the fourth initiation is made possible by the many lesser renunciations of many lives, think of it, all the preparation we go through, consciously undertaken, not just happening, so the many acts of spiritual detachment lead eventually to the severing of the final thread, which involves the death of all personality attachments. Think of it, because it applies to so many. It applied to Alice Bailey. DRS, detachment, rest, and skill in action. Those were her keynotes. Detachment. Not easy. Especially as the second-ray soul of this planet is being cultivated for expression, and that is the ray of attachment. And especially as our planetary logos has personality problems, issues with planetary personality and attachment to it. The many lesser renunciations of many lives. I'd like to make this a little bigger. It's not perfect, but it's a little bigger. Many lives. Many lives lead to this one, and, you know, maybe fortunately for us, we don't remember them. It would be a bit like remembering the lines of Macbeth while you're trying to play Hamlet, you know. Of course, there is continuity, but you want to get your pattern straight. And although reference to previous lives can be very helpful, preoccupation with them can be disturbing. So the many acts of spiritual detachment lead eventually to the severing of that final thread, which involves the death of all personality attachments. You use that personality and you use a body of illusion, a Maya Virupa, in order to express on lower planes, but you realize the instrumentality of it. And we free ourselves from that first illusion, which is to identify as if we were the personality. That's a big problem, and we can say that it's a universal problem at some stage of development. Then only those relationships are left which are upon soul levels. A lot of second law of the soul, magnetic response or polar union, deal with this issue about establishing soul relationships, which are not the clinging personality relationships, which show themselves so often, as he describes, between parent and child. You know, if we don't leave people free, then we never really have the real relationship with them. We have some kind of stultifying relationship. And it can breed a lot of resentment, you know, even though the parent means well. There is such a weakening, you know, of the abilities of the child. And it can be in all these personal relationships. So detachment, which the Buddha taught so expertly, is a key factor. And we do find it mentioned quite often in the keynotes of this majority of secondary disciples that were in Master DK's groups. Your task is to learn to differentiate between such spiritual detachments, and those enforced detachments which are undertaken on higher levels of astral awareness. So this is the specific work of DLR. He was a Libra. Was he? But I know that Libra and Cancer were his main issues. And yet, when he wrote his letters to students, he rarely lost any students because somehow he had managed to hold without holding. You know, holding without making the student really dependent upon him. And that's quite an art. So sometimes detachments are forced at the third petal in a series of petals. Those are sub-sacrifice petals, the third, the sixth, the ninth. And maybe especially the sixth petal. Well, the third as well. People are made to go to war. They're forced to work in situations which are not necessarily pleasant. There are means of detaching them from what they prefer. By the time we reach the ninth petal, things are very, very conscious. The problem of the disciple is to reach a point where he is not hindered or held back by any human being. Oh, that's a potent statement, isn't it? By not hindered or held back. So often we do complain, don't we, about being held back by others, that they are obstructing us in some manner. And we allow ourselves to be obstructed. And yet so handle himself as far as attitude is concerned that he hurts no one in the process of withdrawal. It's so skillful what he's talking about here. Because we all know that there can be a wrenching withdrawal and people are hurt in the process. Maybe it's not skillfully handled. Maybe there's not skill in action in such withdrawal. I'm sure we've all had the experience, either it's done to us or we've done it to someone else. The outer personality claims of attachment are oft so powerful that their clatter and their rattle, this is how it seems to him, right, prevent awareness of the golden thread which links us with another soul. We just don't have that soul-to-soul law of magnetic impulse, where our interest in relating to people is really via their soul. We can talk a good game, and we can think that somehow, oh yeah, I'm really considering your soul. But it turns out that basically we have still very strong personality attachments, and in the four detachments or destructions in the beginning of Rule 11, for advanced students, a lot of it is about impersonality and cutting personal ties, at least when the group is functioning. So think about people you know, and think which ones of those relationships are really based on awareness of the golden thread of the soul linkage. Likewise, overestimation of another person can act as a real hindrance, and he tells us our secondary types are always overestimating the attainment of those with whom they work. The chains must break. Vulcan is forging chains, but Vulcan is also the hammer that can break the chains via the spiritual will, leaving only a golden thread between each soul, the golden thread which cannot break because it's fundamental and has to do with the real identity and not with the gathering of elemental substance and not with the mistaking of personality equipment with a real person. Okay, so that was the DLR, and now we have Dino 1689. So let's see who this might be. Well, maybe it's nobody. It's in the six stages of discipleship, is what it is. And such wonderful instruction there is on these six stages, and maybe finally a seventh stage. So anyway, Dino 1, I referred above to the existence of disciples and of world disciples. Of course, these days, with communications being so rapid and pervasive as they are, we might think that anybody who could get in touch with somebody else on another side of the world is a world disciple, but obviously it means much more than that. So, disciples and world disciples, and, you know, oftentimes it means a disciple at least of the second degree and usually of the third. A world disciple is a man or woman who has made real progress in the adjustment between the particular and the universal, between the specific and the general, and between his own sphere of environmental conditions and the outer world of needy souls. Lately, there has been a kind of phrase where one is encouraged to think globally and act locally. That's been around for a while. But this is what we're talking about, and in a way, it means an adjustment between the cosmic etheric body of the planetary logos and the cosmic dense body. You basically hear the realm of the general starts in the higher mind, and especially in the higher four ethers. And the realm of the planetarily concrete is the lower 18 subplanes, and from certain perspectives, the lower 21 subplanes. So anyway, these two worlds are brought together by the world disciple. He can, having built the Antikarana to a certain extent, you know, the Antikarana is like a forever thing until the universe is over, this universe. Having brought these two things together, can meditate in such a way that the broadly general and principled aspects of the planetary logos can be brought into relation with all the specificities which, from the perspective of the planetary logos, are not really principled. The problem with which such disciples are occupied is not the adjustment of relations between the inner spiritual man, the soul, and its instrument, the personal lower self. Their major interest is how to fulfill the immediate personality obligation and at the same time produce an effect upon the environing world of men because of a strong inner compulsion and a need they feel to shoulder the service and responsibility of their master and their group. They're reaching higher. And these days, especially, the master and his ashram are found on the Buddhic plane, by and large. There are some few on the atmic plane and some, we're told, scientific ashrams that are still on the highest of the subplane of the mental plane. So they want to reach higher. A strong inner compulsion to fulfill the will of the ashram. These men and women are always accepted disciples in the academic sense. You know, it's a kind of a Buddhi Manas thing. In a way, Manas is a very Saturnian factor, and the entire mental plane with its tendency towards divisibility is dealt with under Saturn. Of course, Mercury plays its part. And then as far as the Buddhic expression goes, Mercury is definitely more expressive of that than Saturn is. So that's real discipleship. Saturn and Mercury. That's real accepted discipleship. These men and women are always accepted disciples in the academic sense of the term, and are able to render themselves receptive to spiritual impression. When we say spiritual, we pretty much mean the spiritual triad. They do this if they choose, at will. It's not the same as having a download, you know, where, oh, I had such an impression, it just came upon me. This is a deliberately cultivated ability to access the higher and spiritual planes. It's not for nothing that the spiritual triad is called the spiritual triad. They are integrated people from the personality angle, which is the first stage of integration, isn't it? And susceptible at all times to soul contact. Think about what that means. Susceptible at all times to soul contact, which they can undertake deliberately. Now, can we do that? Can we say, hey, okay, just a second, I'm going to consult the soul, the angel of the presence. I'm going to consult my higher self on the higher mental plane. Maybe not so easily. Maybe not so easily. They are not yet perfect, as they are not yet masters, and the fourth initiation still lies ahead. It's very interesting that on the atmic plane, the siddhi, or power, called perfection, is the fourth level of the atmic plane, correlating here with the fourth initiation, but still higher, in a way, than that which has to be quite thoroughly mastered at the fourth degree. Perfection, it seems, as far as a human being is concerned, is mastership. Of the Chohans, they say, they are no longer men, as are the masters. So that's, in a way, beyond the normal human condition. And the perfect five-pointed star is mastership. But we're pretty well nigh unto perfection when we've taken the fourth degree, because then there we have a direct impression from the monad, and it's not veiled by thought, even high thought. So if we're able to bring the general and the specific together, we're always accepted disciples in the academic sense. We're always integrated from the personality angle, and I guess it should say we're always quite integrated, well on our way to be thoroughly integrated with the soul. Sometimes we say that the soul-infused personality is of the third degree, but it might be more accurate to say of the fourth degree, because that is a kind of completeness of integration with the causal body, egoic lotus, before it is destroyed. The kind of perfection that a master has is not involving anymore the causal body, although, let's say, its dissipation as the debris of a kind of destructive supernova is an important part of preparing for the fifth initiation. For them, but their own imperfections, the fourth initiation still lies ahead for them. Yes, you know, the high priest, Joshua, the high priest who was Jesus, he was an initiate of the third degree, but still not perfect. So the fourth degree still lies ahead for them, as it does, I presume, pretty much for Alice Bailey and for Roberto Assaggioli, we were always being told how he was being trained for his assignment under Master Kuvumi in taking the fourth degree. It was pretty well outlined. The future of it was pretty well outlined for him. And, you know, it was somehow involving the integration of the Jewish group into the whole planetary plan. And he had pretty much outgrown the usual tendencies of the Jewish group, but he was born as a Jew, the last incarnation, and it looked like his future would maybe entail that again. But their own imperfections are not their major point of soul attack or their major preoccupation. World need, because they are world disciples, right? And world demand for spiritual and psychic aid rank paramount in their consciousness. How can we help humanity? Not how can I clean up my own act. They are clear visioned as to people that are basically non-critical. They do know the score, and they do know how long it takes to prepare oneself to be really useful. The recognition of imperfection is automatic with them. Each one sees and knows the villainy of each, right? From the rules of the road. So the recognition of imperfection is automatic with them, but in no way negates loving understanding and readiness to assist on any level where the need appears to be of importance, I suppose, in line with the plan. And that's one of those, apparent opposites. So often, people who are clear visioned and see imperfection turn critical. Not this more advanced type of individual. So what we gather out of this is the whole question of what is perfect, relatively perfect, how the fourth energy relates to perfection, and in a way, from the perspective of the one who is up and coming through the dense physical body of the planetary logos, the fourth degree does indicate a strong degree of perfection. And the city called perfection is connected with the number four. So just to get those numerological connections in our mind. Now, we have a little bit more here. And I suppose it's continues to be in the six stages of discipleship, but in some of the later degrees. Yeah, we're still in the six stages of discipleship. It will, so, and probably this may be all that I'll do in this particular beginning. I'm, of course, realizing that it's not so easy to calculate just where we are in terms of timing. It says here 1 hour and 6 minutes, but I've missed some things, and I'll just have to go with the less precise approach. It will not be possible for me to indicate the work in detail. I intend only to show you as far as is possible how a master prepares the probationer to step from off the probationary path onto the path of discipleship, and that may mean pretty much the path of accepted discipleship. There's different ways of looking at what is a probationer. Sometimes, even before the first initiation, one considers the individual probationer, but sometimes later, until he becomes an accepted disciple. At this point, I would like to point out that I shall be dealing with a period covering the stages of discipleship from the first stage to that of the adept. It's a great span, and some of it takes a long time. But towards the end, there is a kind of rapidity where even the second, third, and fourth initiation can be taken in the same life. And then they go on and tell you that the fourth and fifth initiation can be taken in the same life. So it looks like one of those Mila Repa-like spans of achievement. He seemed to conquer so rapidly the different stages. At the fourth stage, the disciple emerges out of the master's group. Well, you know, what is the chela in the aura? Out of the master's group. And is esoterically called a fixed aspect of the hierarchy. That's interesting, and, you know, there must be a difference between the master's group and what is really a more intensive position within the hierarchy. Sometimes from the old commentary come these translations, and they are of considerable interest. This is a phrase which is necessarily quite meaningless to you, but it does suggest a lack of fluctuation, does it not? He comes then under the influence of Shambhala. You know, you might expect that this is after accepted discipleship. That is the fourth stage. Little chela, ship chela in the light, accepted discipleship. Chela within the aura. And later chela within the master's heart. And always there is greater stability in the positioning of the disciple and the possibility of him wandering out into attractions to the lower self is constantly reduced. So he tells us, nevertheless, it's quite meaningless to us. He comes then under the influence of Shambhala. Okay, the monad. Fourth degree, as we have been told earlier. And the mode of preparing people for association with that first major center is very different to that of preparing them for participation in the work of the center, which we call the hierarchy. So there are disciples who are by now initiates who are being prepared not only to be members of hierarchy, as is the Christ, who has a direct connection with Shambhala, but they are being prepared to receive and express some degree of Shambhalic influence. The one involves the development of love and of group consciousness, which I dare say lies ahead in full measure for many of us. The other involves the unfoldment of the will and the attainment of the stage to which Patanjali gives the name isolated unity. The Tibetan has said that that's kind of an insufficient title. It's not really descriptive of what happens, but it's the best that can be done. Isolated identity, isolated individuality, isolated unity, completed in the first major stage of its development at the fifth degree, and really beginning to be appreciated at the third degree. This is a phrase, he says, which is quite meaningless to anyone below the degree of the third initiation. Well, the sun shines, and the sun on top of the mountain overcomes the isolation into which the mind habitually throws the consciousness. In this discussion, I shall not be dealing with preparation for the various initiations and their specific differences. I shall be dealing with the growth of what is called ashramic intimacy. It is a gradual approach to the centrality of the ashram. We sort of all, in our ashramic affiliations, begin as peripheral attendants upon the master, and I believe such were the groups with which he worked. They were peripheral. They were not solidly consisting of fixed aspects of the hierarchy. I shall be dealing with ashramic intimacy, with the approach of the disciple to the world of souls. We cannot be so glib that we think we have achieved it. And to the unfoldment of his consciousness in relation to the hierarchy and not just humanity. I shall be concerned with his growth in sensitivity and his subsequent and consequent growth in creativity. He means something different here, not the creativity of form, as much as the creativity of vibration. Its impact upon the world of men, because always a certain vibration is needed. Those sensitive to energy know that. And later, appearance of responsive organisms in contradistinction to created forms. We really want our externalizations to be organisms and not just far more rigid organizations. And I would ask you to reflect upon this thought. Well, An organism is a higher thing. It has livingness within it. And he says that when you create an organization, it is inseparable from criticism, which he calls that dire creator of misery. And that is an arresting phrase, too. So, you know, friends, sometimes it takes a little doing to get going. And what I would like to do is somehow, this is the end. Computer doesn't work here. End of fourth initiation. Compilation, and well, what do we call it? Pages 1 and 2. Maybe not very much progress yet, but having the good intention of going on and just hoping that this that I can do this as a preparation for the conference of birds. And what day is this? This is the 5th of April. Okay, so that's that. And our next work, you can tell I'm taking a more leisurely approach. And to give us a little more time to think about these things. Now, obviously, when you do a compilation like this, you're not going in the order that the Tibetan has written. No, you're not. What you're doing is taking, you're studying topically, which, of course, he did advise us to do. And there is a gain to that. There's also a loss. So in a way, nothing takes the place of actually reading the books through straight. Nothing takes that place. And of course, I encourage you. I have spent about 50 years of my life reading these books, plus theosophical books earlier on The Secret Doctrine and so forth. And I'm scratching the surface of what the initiates have written. But in this time of preparation for the Great Conclave of 2025, it helps to be well supported by the excellent material that has been produced, so we do not fall into the inevitable glamour which arises when people become nervous and distressed and really don't know what to do because things are so apparently out of hand. That's what the Tibetan said. Humanity would finally realize that it could not solve its problems entirely by itself, and I assume that means would call upon the spiritual hierarchy of the planet that could appear in such a manner as to really assist humanity in a manner that humanity recognized. Well, we have 5 years and we're going to see. Probably WASAC of 2025 will be a very important moment. But however slowly we absorb, let us absorb. I'm aware that some of my earlier presentations have been, you know, rapidly spoken and so forth. Maybe I'm, there may be days like that also, but I'm just trying to let things sink in as we work together and absorb what we can before the presentation around the year 2025 of the third and new dispensation. So lots of love and many blessings to everybody. And basically, that'll be it for this one. And let's see, I hope we get to go on before the conference. But let's just see, as we work on the fourth initiation. See you soon.